From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Americans didn't always tip, but tipping has worked its way deep into our economy. For restaurants and taxis, yes, but for all kinds of services now, new technology is pushing it deeper and asking for more. But is tipping a good way to structure a wage, a living, an economy? Should we just raise wages? This hour on Point, our tipping economy under challenge. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Should we scrap it and just pay more? Or are tips your lifeblood, your take-home pay? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today in our studio is Kathleen Kingsbury, Deputy Managing Editor for the Editorial Page and Editor of the Ideas section at the Boston Globe. She just won a Pulitzer Prize for her series of opinion pieces, Service Not Included, on restaurant workers and their pay. Katie Kingsbury, congratulations and welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
What a wonderful piece of work you did there.
Oh, thank you.
I'm happy to say I recognized it immediately, and I'm glad the Pulitzer Committee has as well. That's just terrific. Your series was about more than tipping, but tipping was right there in the thick of it, and it seems to me tipping is just becoming a bigger and bigger piece of our wage economy. Why is that? What's happening?
For one, restaurants employ about 10% of our workforce in the U.S. at this point. But other than restaurants, few other industries let bosses rely mainly on customers' generosity to set employee wages. And so that puts the workers immediately at a disadvantage. It means that they have to rely on customers who may touch them or talk to them or...
Well, of course they talk to them. They're in a restaurant.
Of course they talk to them, but inappropriately. Mm-hmm. Four out of five...
This new study is saying women working for tips feel like they're under kind of a low-grade sexual harassment a lot of the time.
Right. And we're talking about workers who often make less than $3 an hour, who depend entirely on tips because the rest of their paycheck goes to taxes. And also, employers don't often make up the difference between the tipped wage and the federal minimum wage.
Which by law, most of them are supposed to do if they're in states that have these super
Absolutely.
Low service wage, alternate minimum wage in a way.
Absolutely. But every indication is, both anecdotally and by surveys by the Department of Labor, is that fill-in-the-gap rule often goes unheeded.
So here we are at a moment when we see pressure in two different directions. On the one hand, you've got some municipalities which are doing away with tipping or trying to and raising the minimum wage. You've got a national call for a higher minimum wage that says, hey, let's put it to $12 or $15 and maybe not have tipping or certainly not have it be so standard as it's become. On the other, that would knock tips down or even be done with them. On the other hand, we're now seeing this new technology where you go into a coffee shop or go into a taxi and it's spreading beyond that. Where it comes time to swipe your card to pay, they flip a screen toward you and they're asking for big money tips. And you're just given a sort of limited number of boxes on the screen. What do you want to pay me, on this $4 cup of coffee for a tip? $1? $2? $3? Technology driving tips higher and deeper.
Of course, tipping is always voluntary, but you're still talking about a group of workers who often don't make more than $10 an hour, who can barely get by to pay their bills. And we often, there are several states now, seven, that have done away with the tip minimum wage. California has led the way. In California, in San Francisco, has a rapidly growing restaurant scene, and yet their workers there make $11 an hour as a standard, and tipping has not gone down.
Tipping was not always a part of American culture. When did it creep in, Katie?
Tipping came from Europe. It was a custom there, and Americans who wanted to show how sophisticated they are began the custom here shortly after the Civil War. But there was another dynamic here. It's my understanding that tipping actually was a way to continue to pay former slaves lower wages, and there was only one other industry that we saw this. It was the train porters, and they organized and did away with tipping, but it stayed and in restaurants to this day, obviously. And that's partially because it's very hard to organize restaurant workers because of the nature of the business. You're talking about a lot of small business owners who maybe only employ half a dozen to 20 employees, it's very hard for those workers to collectively bargain. And therefore, they are continue to have to live off of wages that, you know, most of us would find unbearable.
And that's just a restaurant and is moving beyond that now. But even just in the restaurant, well, you've got the front of the house and the back of the house. The waitresses may do okay on a good night with good tips. But if you're scrubbing the pots out back, which I've done, you may have zero of that.
Absolutely. Technically, you know, you are supposed to share tips in most restaurants. That said, you know, sometimes that just doesn't happen. Also, there are many instances in which we know that managers and owners have skimmed tips from employees. You would think that in this day and age, given the digital technology that's available, that that would guarantee that tips would be distributed correctly, but that doesn't actually happen. And in fact, the system of tipping, the tax laws are so complicated that some owners do away with tipping just so they don't have to deal with those convoluted regulations.
On the other hand, with tipping, they don't have to pay what they would otherwise, and that goes directly to the customer who pays it directly, if they so wish, to whoever's working for them.
Right. Essentially, you know, there are nights when servers have to depend on the generosity of customers. And what happens if, for instance, their food comes from the kitchen and it's not properly cooked? Then you're talking about servers being penalized, busboys being penalized, even some hostesses being penalized for something that they really had no control over.
And tipping moving now well beyond the restaurant world into all kinds of services where the expectation is growing. That goes to the customer's pocket. It doesn't go to the boss or owner's pocket if it's a direct, you know, tip. Katie Kingsbury just won a Pulitzer Prize for her writing on the sort of wage structure of the restaurant industry. Of course, this goes well beyond that. Let me bring in a couple more voices. Katie Kingsbury, stand by. With us from Los Angeles is Nick Bilton. He's a technology columnist at the New York Times. He's been writing about high tech and tipping. Nick, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Ithaca, New York, is Michael Lynn, professor of consumer behavior and marketing at the Cornell University School of Hotel Administration. He's written more than 50 research papers on this topic, tipping. Mike Lynn, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Nick Bilton, first to you. I have begun to see this more and more, these screens that get flipped into my face after I buy a cup of coffee or something else that are asking for a tip, and it's creating a kind of awkward moment. It's not just a bucket waiting if I want to throw something in there. It's sort of in your face, and it's suggesting tip levels that may be higher than some people have traditionally been accustomed to paying, Nick.
Yeah, you have you know, numbers of technologies that now appear. I wrote a column actually last year about how I recognize that I rarely use a pen anymore, and even in instances when I pay for things, because I, you know, screens are everywhere. You no longer sign your check for the most part. You swipe your finger across an iPhone or an iPad or an Android device, whatever it is. And what I started to realize is, you know, when I go to a coffee shop and I, you know, would have ordered a coffee and a croissant and maybe even bought some coffee beans or something like that, I would have put a dollar or two in the tip jar, as I always do. But when you look at these machines and they default to percentages like 15, 20, 25%. You press, you know, the 15% button or 20%, and you're paying $5-6 tip on a small order of coffee and some coffee beans you're going to take home. And you see this happen across all different kinds of experiences in taxi cabs. When you're going to the car wash, you know, just a whole wide variety of it. And, you know, there's lots of research that shows now that, that when you do this percentage kind of model, that people just kind of don't really think about it. It's too much. It's too difficult to kind of do the math in your head. So you just pick the lowest one, and even that is going to be the highest one.
And in New York taxis now, I'm reading, when the screen comes up for you, it's what do you want to pay for a tip? 20 or 25 or 30%? We're talking some real money here.
Yeah, it's fascinating because that wasn't always the case. The average tip pricing in New York was around 15% until they put these screens in, and then it kind of shot up. And you know, the other problem is they don't make it easy for you to do the math. There's no, you know, if you hit the custom button, often with a lot of these technologies, and I tried out a lot of them, it's about a 5-step process to actually figure out what it is that you have to do next.
And meanwhile, the barista or the checkout person is watching you. Why don't you just hit the big number and be done with it?
Yeah, that's the other part is, is you're sitting there with someone staring at you. It would be, it'd be like you, if you were using cash, it'd be like you pulling out, you know, your dollar bill one after the other in front of them and like smoothing it out and counting it and yeah. and them seeing exactly what it is that you're doing. And it can be quite uncomfortable for consumers.
Mike Lynn, we have the impression that tipping is moving deeper and deeper into our economy. Does your research bear that out?
Actually, there are no good studies looking at how prevalent tipping is across a variety of industries over time. We can certainly point to lots of examples where you're tipping today and you didn't used to. Counter help, it seems like tip jars are much more prevalent than in the past. But the cruise industry, for example, has moved away from tipping to daily service charges.
And I mean, is it inevitable as we get deeper into the service economy that the pressure or interest in tipping grows, Mike?
Sure. As more and more people rely on tips for income, it becomes a more and more important topic.
Is it a good way to pay? If you sit back as an economist and look, you know, writ large, is this a good way to compensate American workers?
It's too complicated to give you a simple answer. The part of me that says, no, it's not a good way from a societal standpoint looks at the fact that who we tip is the people that we're expected to tip and the amounts we tip them are the amounts that we're expected to tip. We don't generally tip other people that you aren't required to, and we rarely tip a large excess of the amount expected. And that says that we're mostly tipping for social pressure.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the tipping economy in America, new technology pressure for tips to go up, new political pressure for tips tipping to give way to maybe a higher fixed minimum wage, and meanwhile, tipping appearing to spread into all kinds of work and services these days. Little sound of this here. Independent journalist Lisette Padilla went out into Los Angeles recently, got reactions to a 2013 incident where a man left no tip, left a note instead for a waitress. And here a young woman responds saying that people don't really understand how central to employees' income tips really are.
I used to work as a waitress, and it's horrible. People don't get that that's how you pay your bills. You don't really get that much an hour, so you really need to, you know, get a good tip to make a living.
Other waiters say bring it on. Here's Major Bell, a waiter at Bailey's Steakhouse in Pennsylvania. In January, talked with WNEP News, said he likes working for tips. Good way to make money, incentivizes good service.
To make more money because, you know, there are over-tippers. There are customers who appreciate good work and hard work. They like the personality of their service, so they'll give them more money simply because of that.
But tips is not a wage, it's a tip. And there's all kinds of what you can get into, every sort of conundrum here, a moral dilemma. 1992, Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs. There's this great exchange where before a heist, the guys are talking in a cafe. When they get up to leave, Mr. Pink, this is Steve Buscemi, says he doesn't believe in tipping. Mr. White, played by Harvey Keitel, responds. Pink points out that social standards of tipping are completely arbitrary.
I don't tip because society says I have to. All right, I mean, I'll tip if somebody really deserves a tip. If they really put forth the effort, I'll give them something extra. But, I mean, it's tipping automatically. It's for the birds. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're just doing their job. I mean, she wasn't anything special.
This is a hard job.
So is working at McDonald's, but you don't feel the need to tip them, do you? Well, why not? They're serving you food. But no, society says, don't tip these guys over here, but tip these guys over here.
Katie Kingsbury, what about it? There is a certain kind of arbitrariness here. We're tipping in sit-down restaurants, but the people at McDonald's are working their tails off, and there's not even a tip bucket there.
Well, the workers at McDonald's technically do get the federal minimum wage across the board. In states, obviously, that number is higher. Whereas tipped workers are, if they earn more than $30 a month, they qualify for the tip minimum wage, which is on the federal level, $2.13. It's been the same for the last two decades. And most states, those workers don't make any more than $3 an hour. Employers are supposed to make up the difference if tips don't. But we know for sure that that doesn't happen all the time.
Let's go to Josh in Atlanta, Georgia. Josh, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. This
yeah.
is an excellent topic, and I'm glad people are actually discussing this. You know, quick point for me is it seems like being a server here in Atlanta for one of the Forbes, you know, top 500 restaurants.
Okay.
I won't name it, but it seems to me that tipping and using that way is a great method of deferring costs from the company onto the employee. Basically, as a server, we pay tip outs to the busboys, the bartenders, the food runners.
Yep.
A portion of their wages come out of the tips we make. So not only do we not make as much as we could, we end up the only wages that they make comes from us as well instead of the company.
I mean, isn't there something fair about that? After all, they are clearing the tables, keeping them clean, making the food. It's not just the waiters who are doing the work, I guess, Josh.
But but they're working for the company, aren't they?
Yeah. So let the boss pay them instead of you, out of your sweat, you're saying.
It seems like that would make sense. I mean, you go to a corporate company and people are sitting down. I mean, everybody's getting paid from higher up, aren't they? Like, you have not interns, but engineers working the sound there, and everybody's, that doesn't come out of your paycheck, right?
Not all shared out of the guy out front. Josh, you've got it. Let me get one more, and we'll look at it with our crew here. Joe in Milwaukee. You're on, Joe. What do you say?
Hi. I wanted to say that at least for restaurants, there should be a minimum tip, because those people really work their butt off, and sometimes that really is their income. And if they, do work their butt off and somebody gives them absolutely nothing, that's horrible. But you could tip over, because it should be that, like in Europe, I hear they do not tip, and their customer service is absolutely horrible. It could take, an hour to eat a meal. But tipping is, it shows that how much we care about their service, and gives them incentive to do a good job.
So keep it going, it sounds like there, Joe. Mike Lynn, what about other countries' ways? Joe in Milwaukee looks at Europe and sees less tipping and poor service. I spent a long time in Japan. Not much tipping there, but fantastic service. What are the different norms around the world, Mike?
Oh, wow. Europe typically applies a service charge. In many European countries, you tip on top of that. It's often just to leave spare change. Mm-hmm. But that amount has grown over time. And in Italy, for example, it's customary to tip about 10% on top of the service charge. As for the lack of tipping in Europe causing slower service, the fact is that in Europe, they like a leisurely dining experience. And it would be considered rude for the server to bring you the check before you ask for it. In the United States, we want the server to bring the check promptly, and we don't want to have to ask for it. So it's hard to compare service across different nations, because the standards of service, what's considered good or bad, vary so much.
Mike, has tipping become a bigger part of compensation for American, let's say, restaurant workers? 20%, 15-20% seems to be much more often laid down now than I remember years ago. Does that mean it's been, are people relying on it more?
Wow. I paid my way through school waiting tables back in the late 70s, early 80s. And I depended upon tips for pretty much 100% of my take-home pay. While I was getting a small hourly wage, that was almost all eaten up by tax withholding. So it's hard to increase from 100%. You can't get much more important than that. But I would say tipped minimum wages have been fairly stagnant, while the minimum wage has increased, and tip percentages have increased over time. So, yeah, in general, I guess people are more dependent on tips today than they were in the past.
Nick Bilton, the tech companies who are making this easier and kind of driving tipping with these new panels that will get flipped toward you to click your tip after you've gotten into the payment process, what's their strategy here? Do they see tipping as becoming bigger and bigger? What's the business model?
Well, they see tipping as something they want to put in the background. It goes back to Uber, essentially. When you would take a taxi, as we discussed earlier, you had to, you know, either pull out some cash and pay that way or with your card or whatever. And now you have to tap a button on a screen and pick what the percentage is. When you call an Uber or Lyft, the two car services, you pick out your phone, and the car comes, you get in the car, you go to wherever you need to go, and then you get out. And there is a service fee that's applied. And you know, Uber has this weird wording as far as whether it's a tip or not. But what you're seeing is kind of the Uberification of tipping in other industries, now restaurants.
So, so I mean, it doesn't go away, but it gets built in. It's kind of seamlessly invisible.
Yeah, it's completely seamlessly invisible. And so now you have a bunch of new apps and services that are coming about that allow you to do the same thing in a restaurant. So I used one of them on Sunday, actually. There's an application called Reserve, and actually one of the guys that made it is one of the early Uber guys, too. And what it is you pull out your phone and you make a restaurant reservation somewhere. And when you go to the restaurant, you sit down, you eat, and then at the end, you literally just get up and walk out. And your bill is charged to your phone, which is tied to your credit card, and in it is a preset 20% tip. And you can go in and change that, but that's just the preset. And so you don't have to think about it. It's just part of it. And there are other apps that are doing this, too, and it's also happening in kind of other industries a little bit. But this is the whole concept that you don't have to think about it. And it's built into the entire experience.
Katie, here's tech making it invisible and automatic. It really takes the, I'm assessing the quality of my service today before I leave my tip piece out. I guess you could change it, but if you've got a default setting you've already clicked in before you even show up, is this where the pay ought to be coming from?
I think Nick is actually describing something that most customers would really like to have. I think tipping is actually quite awkward for customers. But what you're still describing is a system in which workers have no reliable amount of income. Think about the times when you have withheld or undertipped because you felt like you were getting bad service. That, you know, everyone has done that once in a while. But when you do that, you're depriving the server of his or her income for the night. And, you know, that's their actual wage. That doesn't, you know, make you a bad person, but it does mean the system is broken.
You've got all kinds of people responding with different dilemmas here on Twitter. Cole says, do I tip the barber if he also owns the shop? Clearly, he's not working for tips, but I don't want a bad haircut next time. Kay, pooled tips penalize overachievers and rewards slackers. Oh, well, I guess if you're paying, you know, if you're the upfront person.
Again, you're describing a system, you know, that has so many disadvantages. So why not just eliminate it? Why not just pay everyone the minimum wage and then have tips be something that actually rewards good service?
Michael says, tipping is a relic of a bygone age. Give workers the dignity of a fair wage and stop this annoying inconvenience. Mike Lynn, what would be the consequences if tipping were done away with? Let's say just start in the restaurant industry.
Prices would go up. Many servers' wages would actually go down. I don't deny that there may be some servers who are underpaid because of tipping, but that's not my own personal experience, nor is it the experience of the servers that I talk to and do research with on a regular basis. Most servers make more money with tips than they could get in any alternative form of employment, and that was certainly the case with me. So. And when I ask servers, they like tipping. At least the vast majority would prefer to work for tips because they recognize that they're getting more than they could otherwise get. So to me, many servers would see a drop in their income if we were to eliminate tipping.
We're going to talk with a Seattle restaurateur who's getting rid of tipping, their wage, minimum wage going to $15 there. Brian in Cranston, Rhode Island. Hi, Brian. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I love your show. I just want to let you know that. Love the Reservoir Dogs scene because of the absurdity of it.
Yeah.
But I just think when you go out and you're getting served by someone, that you should tip them well. As if they're a terrible waitress or waiter, of course, you tip them less. But you have to tip. Stay home and cook if you don't feel like tipping.
What do you know about it personally? Are you waiting, Brian, or serving?
I actually am in a customer service job that I don't get tips at.
Okay.
And my wife is a waitress and does get tips. And I think it's fair both ways. We're choosing our professions, but we couldn't survive if there wasn't a tip system. They just don't pay enough.
Yeah. Well, what about just raising the wage? Would that be enough? If it was a $15 an hour minimum wage and that's what your wife got, would that come close to what she's making? Have you ever done the math?
I haven't, but I know the restaurant probably wouldn't be open if they had to pay that much. So restaurants struggle, as we all know. They usually shut down well within a year. Majority of them, they wouldn't survive if they had to pay everyone then.
Pick your poison. Of course, it's being done some places, and we'll look at that. Thanks, Brian. Becca in Austin, Texas. Becca, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm the owner of a small chair massage business in Austin, and as a business owner, I couldn't imagine building tips into the wages that my therapists make. We never actively solicit for tips, but people consistently tip 22-25% to our therapists, and that's just gravy for them. That's just stuff they get to take home, and they get to keep 100% of it. But I feel like I'd be doing them and their work such a disservice if I paid them less and included tips in their base pay.
So you're the owner, Becca. You're the boss. You're the owner, and you honestly don't think about their tip income when you think what they're going to take home?
Nope. Not at all. Not at all. That's just extra for them as far as I'm concerned.
And when you're hiring someone, you don't say to them, I pay X an hour, but you're likely to get another 20% on top of that from your customers?
I'm sure we'll mention that, but I don't pay them less assuming they're going to be getting tips.
So,
that's just not a way that I feel is fair and ethical to run a business.
Yeah. Becca, I appreciate your call as well. Mike Lynn, here we are. You ready to change this system with all the bigger minimum wage talk? There's a lot of talk about changing it. Seattle's done it. Los Angeles is looking at it.
Right. First, let me respond to the caller's comment. I think she can afford to ignore the tips as a source of her workers' income, in part because she probably doesn't have much competition. But in a restaurant context where there are a lot of restaurants for customers to choose from, if I recognize my servers are getting tips and realize that I don't need to pay them quite as much because of that, that allows me to lower my menu prices and to be perceived as more expensive, and all of a sudden I get more customers. And so I think the economic pressures and price competition is one of the factors that drive tipping in the restaurant industry and perhaps not in her massage industry.
Nick Bilton, you're a columnist at the New York Times. How would you like it if your compensation was based on readers sending you cash if they liked your column?
Well, based on the comments I get on some of my columns, it probably wouldn't work out so well. I do want to say, you know, it's interesting because there's this whole thing, there's this philosophy that people believe that the tipping is based on service. And I know Mike's done some research into this, and I've read a lot of other research and spoken to researchers about this. It's not directly correlated in many instances.
It's just become a standard expectation.
Yeah, it's like even if you have bad service, you may only tip, 5% less or something like that. But what technology is doing that is changing things, which I believe, is, when you look at that Uber model, right, your Uber driver is incentivized to be nice to you because if he's rude or tries to rip you off by driving around in circles 10 times in a parking lot, then you have a rating system. So you can rate between 1 and 5 stars, and 5 stars being the best. And if you're not satisfied, you rate it a lower rating. And if the Uber drivers get enough low ratings that bring their overall rating down, then they get fired from the service. And so you're starting to see that happen with these other apps and services too that are trying to get rid of tipping. And I actually think it's a better experience because you know what your standard income is going to be, give or take. And you're still incentivized to be nice, to work hard because you're going to be rated.
Right. And the rating right there, but the tip more or less built in, but the rating sitting there. Nick Bilton with the New York Times. Thank you so much for joining us today, Nick. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the tipping economy in America, new technology pressure for tips to go up. new political pressure for tips, tipping to give way to a higher fixed minimum wage, and meanwhile, tipping spreading into all kinds of work, with Michael Lin at Cornell University's School of Hotel Administration has looked a lot at tipping. Kathleen Kingsbury, Katie Kingsbury, just won the Pulitzer Prize for her columns on restaurant compensation in the Boston Globe. Last week, low-wage workers protested around the country, many of them at fast food places. Here was a Popeyes worker, Shamira Jones, saying in an interview with WPVF-ITV in Philadelphia, her current wage there, $7.25 an hour, not enough to support herself and her son.
I don't get paid enough, and I got a fortunate family that helps me take care of my son, because $7.25 is just not enough to take care of my son alone.
Not asking for tips, asking for a higher wage. Many people saying, well, a lot of these low-wage places are actually relying on the government to subsidize their industry through all kinds of transfer payments. And it's not just, of course, restaurants. Last June on a local Rhode Island morning talk show, The Road Show, co-host Will Gilbert talked with guest Susan Hogan about the added expense of wedding tips.
Many brides and grooms forget to add one costly budget buster. We're talking about tips. That's right. And joining us this morning with more is Susan Hogan with tips on just who to tip and how much gratuities. They can get out of control and they get crazy, and it can get awkward at sometimes, who to tip, who not to tip.
It's so awkward if you don't know the protocol. And yeah, tips have to be included in your wedding budget. We're talking hundreds, if not a couple of $1,000s.
Tips, tips, tips all over the place these days. Emily in Alston, Massachusetts, thanks for calling. You're on the air, Emily.
Hi, Tom. I'm a huge, huge fan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you see?
Just a couple points I want to bring up. Typically, I'm lucky to work in a restaurant where we do have health benefits. A lot of times, restaurants don't offer those benefits. We also work holidays and aren't compensated for working on those holidays. Another thing, I mean, I agree, tipping is awkward. A lot of times we have business dinners, we have 20 people coming in, and we're not allowed in the restaurant where I work to add the gratuity. And a lot of times people would like the convenience of that, just them not having to worry about that, and it leads to kind of an awkward situation. One other thing I want to bring up is that when we tip out, what your caller was saying before about tipping out the runners and the bussers and the bartenders.
Yeah, sure. Sharing the tips, time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So our, no matter what tip we get, the tip out is based off of our sales, and it's not based off of our tips. So it's just, there's so many moving parts. I just think, I agree. I agree that it's awkward, and I think that there should be a change in the minimum wage. And I heard that the wage for servers was based off of a long time ago, the minimum wage, and it just has stayed where it is. It hasn't gone up.
So let's change a little bit. A lot of that is in the air. People responding online. John saying David Sedaris put out a tip jar on book tour a few years ago because everybody else does. G says to us, it's the arbitrary nature of tipping that bothers me. Sam says, as they say in Australia, they pay us enough that you don't have to tip. Let's go to David in Hampton, New Hampshire. David, you're on. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
My point is that customers should not have the burden of paying the salaries of the restaurant workers. Restaurants do make enough money anyway. And, if the tips are taken away and the extra, prices should not be building, they do make enough money as they are. And making a living through the tips is not an honorable way to make a living, actually.
Well, why not? You're giving good service, you're being tipped. What's not honorable about that?
Well, why should I reward a worker for their good work? And it's the job of the employer. I mean, I'm an employer.
Mm-hmm.
I do employ 6 people in Hampton, New Hampshire.
Okay.
And I cannot get away, not paying the state minimum or federal minimum wages. Why should the restaurants should get away with that? That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, David, I appreciate your call. Katie Kingsbury, it does create a whole class of kind of people who are contingent on the generosity of others in our economy. I mean, hopefully it works out, but there's this kind of contingent, it smacks a little bit of servitude in the old-fashioned sense here.
Yes, definitely. I think Emily hit the nail on the head. We are talking about an industry that gives its workers almost no other benefits beyond their wages. We're talking about people who more or less are forced to, in the words of several servers, dress up to be date ready. They have to be look nice. They have to make sure they're polite. They have to tolerate behavior that we would never ask in other professions.
I mean, the first part of that seems nice for the customer. They're dressed nicely. They've got a nice attitude. I'm going out and I'm paying for a dinner. They shouldn't be abused, but it doesn't seem so bad if they're pleasant.
Well, it's more than dress nicely, I guess. It's dressed provocatively. In a manner that is attractive. I mean, one of the biggest things that I heard about the restaurant industry is that by about age 35, people who try to make this their career often suffer because their looks begin to fade, for instance. It's one of those industries where, you're more or less creating a whole pocket of people that are vulnerable in ways that we just wouldn't tolerate in normal circumstances.
Yeah. Katie Kingsbury, please stand by. And Michael Lynn at Cornell. Joining us now from Seattle, Washington, is Bob Donegan. He's president of Ivers. It's a big group of Seattle-based restaurants, including Ivers Salmon House, which recently raised its wages to $15 an hour and is telling customers not to tip. Bob Donegan, thank you very much for being with us from Seattle.
Boston Tom, good to have you.
It's great to have you. So what was the context in which you bumped up your minimum, your wage payment, and bumped out tipping?
So on April 1st, the law in Seattle changed and raises the minimum wage from $9.47 an hour to $11 April 1st, $13 January 1st, 2016, and $15 January 1st, 2017. Mm-hmm. We saw it as an opportunity in our full-service restaurants to deal with a discrepancy between the earnings of the people who talk to the customers, the bartenders and the servers,
yep,
and everybody else in the restaurant, the cooks, the dishwashers, the janitors. We know that for the last 4 years, our average customer has tipped 17%.
Okay.
And we asked if we took that 17% away and shared it among everyone in the restaurant, if we could, number one, get everyone to 15 immediately, and number two, preserve everyone's wages at the same or higher level. Unlike many restaurants, we also offer full benefits to everyone who works for us that's as good as any professional services firm in town, the software companies, law firms. So even if you're a part-time person, you can get full health care benefits. We determined we could not get there on 17%, but if we added 4% to that, we could. So on April 1st, we raised all of our prices 21%. We suggested to customers that they not tip anymore, and we share that among everyone who's hourly who works in the restaurant. We promised the people who work in the restaurant that over the course of a year, none of their income would go down. You can't measure it today or this week, because if the weather is good or bad, that'll determine how many customers come in.
Right.
But if you give us a year, we'll make everyone whole. And we have had a surprising finding in the last 22 days. And that is, the number one complaint from our customers is, you don't make it easy for us to leave a tip.
they still want a tip. Bob, let me ask you about your bottom line in this picture. You've raised prices 21%. That could mean a drag on sales, on people coming in and buying up.
Customer counts since we've made this change are up about 40%. That's 40. Revenues are up in excess of 50%.
Now, those are huge bumps. Why? Are they coming in to support this move?
Part of it is the economy as strong as can be. Part of it is the tourist economy with low gas costs are mm-hmm. Allowing people to eat out more. But we've also been on every radio, TV station, all the print media, Los Angeles Times, Al Jazeera, Reuters. And so we're getting enormous publicity about this. And when they show the picture of our native longhouse, the Salmon House,
yeah,
it reminds people that we exist, and the whole community is talking about this idea.
And you went straight to $15 an hour. You didn't wait until 2017 to do that, in your case.
Correct.
This was maybe related. You were on the Seattle mayor, Ed Murray's. You were on his advisory committee on income inequality. Pull the curtains back. What's the bigger picture that you see here, Bob, as an employer, as a citizen of Seattle? What's the impact you hope for?
Well, for us, it works. And we think it works. It's been 3 weeks. We'll see what this is like as it gets into the months. But for us, it works. We August 1st will be our 78th anniversary. We've been a restaurant innovator for a long time. Unlike what your other guests have been talking about, how restaurants treat employees, we don't do that. In the Salmon House alone of the 103 employees, we have many employees who have been there 25, 30, and 35 years. There are two families who have grandmothers, sons or daughters, and grandsons working for us. We treat our employees really well. So for us, our strategy is to have really happy employees, because when you have happy employees, you get happy customers.
$15,
I don't know
yeah.
if that works with other industries or businesses.
Yeah.
One of the things we worried about in the mayor's $15 minimum wage committee was nonprofit organizations. They typically pay people at the minimum wage, and their deficits are paid by governments. When the city passed this $15 minimum wage law, the city did not increase compensation or reimbursement for nonprofit agencies. So I don't know how it's going to work for them. But for us, the system appears to be working. We haven't lost any employees, and the customer counts and sales appear to be growing.
With tips off the table and a $15 an hour minimum wage and a guarantee that nobody will make less than they made when tips were sort of general rule there, Bob Donegan is president of Ivers in Seattle. We're talking about the tipping economy in America. Michael Lynn in Ithaca, New York, 21% price hike, and they're off to the races with a new strategy. Could that work for most restaurants, all restaurants? What do you think, Mike?
If everybody were required to do it, then you don't have a competitive disadvantage, right? If you raise prices, you're going to price some people out of the market. The fact is, tipping allows wealthy consumers who are price insensitive to subsidize the dining out behavior of less wealthy, more price sensitive customers. So if everybody had to pay $15 an hour, everybody raised their menu prices by 20%, you would get some reduction in overall dining out, but you at least don't suffer a competitive disadvantage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But do I think this is – but in a competitive environment where you can't force everybody to do that, do I think this is – a good solution in the long term? No. I think that the kinds of publicity that he's talking about is helping cover the long term negative effects of raising his prices. He mentions that the biggest complaint he gets is that it's difficult for the customers to tip. In fact, what I would expect is there are always going to be people who want to tip on top of whatever prices you're charging. And more as people learn that others are tipping, they're going to start to feel social pressure to do so as well. And eventually, tipping is going to get back to normal levels on top of these already high menu prices. The only way to avoid that is to prohibit your employees from accepting tips.
They're not encouraging it right now. I mean, Katie, what do you think about Bob Donegan's path here, Seattle's path, $15 an hour minimum wage in his restaurant, no tipping, please?
I think that one of the things that Mike is getting at is the fact that the law actually needs to come into play here. We need to make it so that all restaurants do away with tipping. So, and not do away with tipping per se, but make tipping a reward for good service. So that means pay workers the minimum wage that all other workers get, the workers in the restaurant industry, the same minimum wage that all other workers get, but then allow customers who do have good service to reward that good service. And we see in California, California is leading the way. California's restaurant industry is growing by 10% in the next 10 years.
Even though they extend the full minimum wage to all workers there.
Exactly. And what we've seen is that tips have not gone down. They've actually stayed about level. But that becomes a bonus for workers as opposed to something that they have to rely on for their take-home pay.
Bob Donegan, you're in the middle of this experiment. Do you see our country moving more deeply into tipping territory or saying enough already? We've taken this is maybe too far?
I'm locked here in the Pacific Northwest and don't know how to think about the rest of the country very well.
Mm-hmm. What about in Seattle itself? Are you in such a special circumstance that you're one of a kind?
I get 6 or 7 phone calls or emails a day from other restaurant operators in Seattle asking how our experience is going. We're the only one who has gone out so far with such a big change.
There's also the fact that if you are not tipping, you can expect to pay 15 to 20% more for your dinner and not have the actual total price be much higher.
What do you think? Do you feel the brakes going on, the drift toward more and more tipping, Katie, or are we still deep in that?
I think that there are certainly technologies that are making tipping more common, but at the same time, we see restaurateurs in New York, in Washington, D.C., in Texas, all over the country saying, no, we don't want to have tips anymore.
Well, while it's the way of the land, we encourage good tipping. A lot of people depend on that. It's the fundamental structure we're looking at here today, and I'm grateful to all three of you for helping us do that. Bob Donegan with Ivers in Seattle. Good luck, Mr. Donegan. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Michael Lin at Cornell University School of Hotel Administration. Mike, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Kathleen Kingsbury, who just won a Pulitzer Prize for looking into all this in the restaurant business. Congratulations again, Katie.
Oh, thank you so much, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. Good luck with your tips while you need them. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.